Accession number 18338, Reel 2.
David Fisher, Reel 2.
Some of them were not the brightest lads in the world, but they really needed it, really wanted to work, and we got them through.
I'm interested in the APCA side of it, because there are quite a lot of allegations, really, regarding the Second World War, about the political role in the army of APCA. Do you think there was much of a political role for APCA in your day?
I don't remember it being so. I do remember, however, that one of the pamphlets was withdrawn. I have a feeling it was called It Could Happen Here. There could well have been political overtones in it. I personally wasn't desperately aware of it. Most of it was treated as a big joke, quite honestly.
What was it that could happen here?
I think it was something about communism, as far as I remember. But it was a long time ago. I'm sure these documents have got to be available. We should come to this sort of later on. Because being, as I say, a member of the Royal Army Educational Corps, I do know that on many occasions we had to send one copy of everything that we produced back to the archives. So all this could be traced back through the Corps Association or through the Corps history.
Do you remember any of the lessons that you gave under APCA?
No, they were mainly talks. They were discussion groups more than lessons.
On what subjects do you remember doing?
I can't honestly remember now. I know that everybody was a bit bored with it all. I think too, that at some stage platoon officers were supposed to do it as well, but most of the platoon officers would shirk their responsibility and be handed over to the schoolie, which was the educational corps. Right?
Were you having to deal with illiterate soldiers?
Oh, yes.
Was there much of that?
I don't know what date they formed the SPEs, Schools of Preliminary Education, but there were a fair amount of soldiers who were desperately poor at reading and writing. We also had some, of course, who'd been called up who didn't even speak the same language. For instance, I remember in Signals we had a couple of Cypriot boys who found life a bit difficult. But I wrote letters for many of them home. And, you would... Perhaps I was a bit naive, but I would make a point at some stage of going up to company orders or battalion orders and getting there at approximately the same time, because I knew that several people would be standing there waiting for somebody to literally read it out loud because they weren't sure.
The reason I ask is because of the controversy about the amount of illiteracy or semi-literacy amongst children leaving school today. And the comparison with the past.
I don't think I could really comment. I mean, there was always a fair sprinkling in any unit who found it difficult to manage, but you must remember that at this stage, most of the time I was either with the Royal Signals or the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers, where although they have the equivalent of general duties, most of them are tradesmen of some sort. But at the early stages, in the basic training units, in my room, as I said, which we talked about earlier, there were at least two who would not have been able to read company orders.
Did you ever have such a thing as a discipline problem?
Myself?
Any of the people? Any of the teachers?
No, not really. I did never find things difficult. I believe one or two of them may have done. There was no problem. I mean, they knew they'd got to come, they knew what they'd got to do, and we knew what we'd got to do. It was a bit awkward for some of them, particularly some of the young National Service soldiers. I always felt, in the early stages, the same thing as far as I was concerned. As I said earlier on, I was a warrant officer before I was 19. The next youngest warrant officer to me was 33. And it was an enormous gap. And in any case, most of the time, I would be the youngest in the mess, although one of the senior. Which always seemed to work out right. He's just a schoolie, which was no problem.
What does SPE mean?
School of Preliminary Education. These, they took the people with a very, very low reading age. There are several, if you've got, I'm sure, in touch with the Royal Army Educational Corps Association, they could put you in touch with people who can tell you far more about SPEs than I can. Although, we much later on, we're talking about 5 or 6 years later, I was posted at the Guards Depot at Caterham, and they had their own SPE. They wouldn't, at that stage, allow their soldiers to go and mix with other soldiers at the SPE because they were guards, so they had their own. And I worked in that one for quite some time.
Did you find it satisfying doing that kind of
thing? Oh, yes, yes. It's difficult to put your actual finger on what satisfies you. As a little lad, walking down into town with my father, who, as I said earlier on, was the headmaster, he said, "Will you buy me a newspaper, please?" And there was a little old chap who stood at the top of the town, and there was the Evening Standard, the Press, and the Evening News. And he said, "I said, what do you want?" He said, "I want the Evening News," and he gave me half a crown to go and get the paper. And I think the paper was either a penny or a penny halfpenny. And I went up with half a crown, gave it to the chap and said, "Can I have the Evening News?" And he said, "Sorry, can't change that." Came back and I said, "Daddy can't change it." He gave me a 2-shilling piece, "Take that up." Gave the 2-shilling piece to the chap and the chap changed it, no problem. I said, "Daddy seems to have lots of change." He says, "Yes, I know, I taught him. He's got a job." It took me an awful long time, but I taught him to change money up to 2 shillings. That's satisfaction.
Now, let's go back to Korea. You got your posting.
Yep.
What was the voyage out like?
Oh, it was new to practically all of us. It was the first reinforcement group. One actually stands up. Well, we had a complete mixture of people. We had the Dutch Van Hoyts Regiment. We had reinforcement for just about every group that was out there. We had a Belgian regiment. And as I say, all manner of different groups doing different things. We ate in relays. Everything was translated into about 4 different languages. We were only a small group because there was never a large attachment of us in Korea anyway. We basically looked after ourselves with no problem. The most horrendous trip of all was leaving Beaconsfield, which was then the depot moved from Buchanan Castle to Beaconsfield. Leaving Beaconsfield, kitted up with just about everything you could possibly think of, including rifles, string vests, cold weather clothing, everything, and then having no transport to Waterloo. So we carried this lot through London in the rush hour. Kit bags, sea bags, rifles, the lot. It was like a walking Christmas tree in rush hour. Trip out was quite fun. I quite enjoyed it. We saw places we'd never seen. Well, we hadn't at that stage seen. Obviously, we went out through the Suez Canal. We landed in, we stopped on the way out, obviously, but landed in, can't remember, in Japan. Then we crossed the Inland Sea to Busan in one of these tiny, I think it must have been an Indian army boat once, a tiny little boat took us across to Busan. And then from Busan, we made our way, I think by lorry, up to Rediv, which was then the, had just become the first Commonwealth Division.
What did you find there?
I don't know what I really expected, but the small detachment, and it was a very small detachment that we had there, was based on an ex-paddy field with sort of low hills behind it. It consisted of two or three tents, a telephone exchange vehicle, 1,500 weight, and about four jeeps. And a group of people who were a complete mix-up of just about everything. New Zealand drivers, and much later on, Australians, French Canadians, all sorts of bits and pieces. But the first instinct was that the place was completely top-heavy. We had a major commanding it, two captains, about five sergeants, and perhaps four or five drivers. Now, the ratio of officers and NCOs to soldiers was ridiculous. But then we were a fairly specialist unit, and the lowest rank was sergeant, so what can you expect?
What was your unit called?
It was called the Crown News.
What were you supposed to do?
Well, from early concepts, it had been considered, quite rightly, that many of the soldiers who went to Korea were national servicemen, and soldiers being soldiers anyway, are interested in what happens. Not necessarily in what happens in Korea, but far more interested in what happens at home. Even though you may be 12,000 miles away, you still want to know who won the football. So, two newspaper units were set up. One in Busan, called the Busan Base Gazette, and one following the actual division at the rear div level, which would be the equivalent of a duplicated broadsheet, which was intending to keep the troops up to date with what was happening basically at home and in the world. All this information would be obtained by radio. This is why we had a telephone exchange vehicle. It was printed every day, so we worked 7 days a week. The intention was, I think quite rightly, that small broadsheet, it was only a duplicated thing, admittedly, but it was done on a Gestetner, which, if anybody deserves a prize, the firm Gestetner deserves a prize. That thing produced thousands and thousands of copies for days on end. But our aim was to have the news on the GOC's table at breakfast, and he would be the last to get it. So the intention was to produce something which would go right round the division, to every unit in the division, sometimes down to company level, usually to battalion level, so we could get to battalion CP. And all the other people who you met, strange people, you knew that if you were delivering it in the morning, you would go past one place and there would be a lone Royal Military Police standing there, or trying to wave you through or stop you or whatever. So we had loads of what we called spares, which we stuck a bit of tape round and literally threw them at them as we went past. They were delighted to have them. Rather like American newspaper boys, I suppose. But, you know, they knew the football results, which made it worthwhile.
Were the football results the main thing?
No, but ask a soldier what he reads. Does a soldier pick up a paper and open it from the front or the back? What do you do?
I tend to be a bit of a political animal, so I am near the front myself. But.
I think you'll be one of the few.
Yes. So, what was your specific job? Did you do everything?
I, in fact, at some stage must have done most of it, in one way or t'other. The absolute editing would have been done by either the commanding officer or one of the captains who would have been with us at that stage. Purely, I always thought myself politically after it was rather clever postings. There was a major in charge of Korean Base Gazette, there was a major in charge of the Crown News, or which had been, of course, the Circle News before it, when it was only a brigade, but it had now got as far as a division. Both the commanding officers of a Royal Army educational unit both had awards for gallantry from the last war. So they'd been chosen so that, they would be good for the side. One had got his, John Grimsey had got his with the Duke Wellington's, I think. And I don't know what Harry Mannering got his with, but both of them had awards for gallantry. Which I thought was politically very okay with the rest of the army. So what did I actually do? A bit of everything, I suppose. I distributed it for quite some time. That was doing it after we used to put the paper to bed somewhere about midnight. We had a cover, a bloke from the Norfolk Regiment, another chap eventually from the Black Watch, who came as sort of helpers, and they duplicated it, which meant turning this handle thousands and thousands of times, and the sheets whistling out at the end. They would then be stapled together, depending on which regiment you were going to. For instance, when it got to its absolute heyday, a complete copy would consist of a front page, which would be world news and home news, then general news, and then it would work through. We had a complete Australian page. We had, by this time, this is much later on, we have a member of the Australian Army Education Corps posted in, working with us, producing a page entirely for Australians. A French Canadian, who would be producing the same thing for the Van Dusen Regiment, the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry and the Royal Canadian Rifles, plus the Royal Canadian Horse Artillery. We had a New Zealander as well, and we even got as far at the end of having two Koreans in. So we're now producing a paper which, when put together, consists of about five or six different languages, which is great for troop morale.
Did you get any feedback?
They were delighted to have it.
But, I mean, in the way of letters that you could publish?
Oh, yes. Who was it? I'm convinced now, he was Crayock, Commander Royal Army Ordnance Corps. He was very good at crosswords. And he quite regularly used to provide us with a crossword which we put in. And he always signed himself Jam Stealer, which is very appropriate since he was in the Ordnance Corps and provided a surprise. We sometimes got the letters, not very often. There weren't a great many facilities for the battalions to write, quite honestly.
Did you have illustrations?
Oh yes, I did that for a while as well. The illustrations, of course, because they were done on Gestetner skins, had to be hand-drawn, as did all the titles. For my sins at one stage, I went to art school, not for very long, but I could draw not very well, but I invented a little cartoon character. There was a village about 60 miles back called Wijonbu, and I had this little man called Wee John Bo from Wijonbu, and drew a couple of cartoons for him, but it's not my scene. I couldn't think of them. I don't have the ability that others have. But everything else was hand-drawn. Actually, if you really want to see the one that was beautifully done, it was the one the day that the Queen was Queen's coronation day. That they're all filed away. As I said earlier on, we had to send copies of everything we did back. So every single newspaper that was published over there, one copy went back to the United Kingdom, at least one copy, and they're all filed away somewhere. I expect you'd have to find Lorna Swift to sort that lot out. And I remember the Coronation Day one was superb. We had actually got a complete diagram of what the what it would look like inside Westminster Abbey on a gestetner, drawn on a skin with a stylo, which is extremely difficult.
Did the military authorities ever give you advice or orders about things to do to raise morale?
Never. Never. And not to my knowledge.
What impression did you get of morale in the army in Korea?
Excellent. It got cold, it got wet, it got hot. I can only really speak from my group, from my own particular group. I could, certainly a few years ago, have given you every battalion in the division with their number and where they were and everything else. Principally because if you were taking out the delivery run, you went to them all. But you were only there for fleeting moments. You would stop somewhere, you know, what ho, here's your copy, and away you'd go, because it was a fairly long ride, a run round in a jeep, and it got pretty hairy on occasions. So you didn't really meet too many of the other people. Most of the people in rear div, who were responsible really for making sure that the division functioned, they seemed jolly enough. I know we had some enormous parties. Financed, I'm ashamed to say, very often by our American comrades, who were very, very naive. They're great collectors of mementos. Hat badges they loved. And then they saw ours. And since there were so very few of them there, never seen that. What's that? Oh, that's the RAEC. Geez, what's that, bud? Quick look round, nobody back. Royal Atomic Energy Commission. Jesus Christ! I like one of them badges, certainly. I just happen to have a spare in my pocket. Which financed us quite well for whiskey and one or two other things. And we were... Americans tend to be dry, as we never, or very rarely, are dry. So we didn't find it very difficult to get hold of the odd bottle of scotch, which would fetch an arm and leg with the Americans, and buy us, which we much preferred, an awful lot of Asahi beer, which tended to freeze rather often, but thawed out, it was still possible.
Did you have much contact with any of the other allies apart from the Americans?
Well, of course, obviously our own Commonwealth troops. Turks a little bit. The Dutch a little bit. And then, of course, although I did never require treatment, fortunately, we had the 60th Indian Field Regiment. We had the Rhodesian Air Force. But basically, apart from the Americans, we didn't have a lot of contact. We were our own division. We were a Commonwealth division. It was obviously easier to do that because we could keep it within the same monetary bounds. The only people who found it a little bit, not difficult, I mean, I came in contact quite a lot with them, and that was the Canadian Brigade, because they would obviously be in dollars, whereas we were in sterling, etc., with the Australians and New Zealanders. But they had their own brigade. say, the Van Dusen Regiment, the Royal Canadian Rifles, who later became the Canadian Guards, part of them, and they had their own transport and everything else. But again, we had a Canadian correspondent on the newspaper at the end, and when it starts to finish, at early stages it was a bit primitive, but towards the end the unit had got quite strong, and we must have been 25 of us there, I think, at the end.
What were the main problems you had in doing our job?
Lack of sleep. You've got to spend most of the day putting the paper together. You've then got to put the paper to bed about midnight, print it off, and then somebody's got to take it out, which was part of the time of my job. And because of the time gap, if you wanted to pick up, as we quite regularly did, BBC News, you're not picking it up for some ridiculous hour in the morning. So consequently, I think sleep was one of the lack of things. And because we were not, I suppose, just within walking distance of the what called itself a sergeant's mess at Rear Div, where we would have eaten, the difficulty was that because of the funny hours that people worked, a lot of them didn't eat right very well.
Did you ever come under fire?
As such, the unit, we didn't, no. Taking the newspaper out in the morning could get a bit hairy, and we did do one rather sharp little run. We took a shortcut, which was damn silly. Instead of going the long way round, we went the shortcut, and somebody tried to mortar us, but had a very nice little Maori driver called Wiki Monroe, who drove very quickly, and we were around the hill in a very short time, I promise you. I didn't spend all my time there. For a while I was in Seoul. We had sort of just one person in the educational corps there as a sort of backup. He was responsible for getting the paper and the equipment over from Japan, which would be then stored with the FMA, Forward Maintenance Area. And in that same area, we would store all the kit that we needed to supply the newspaper up at Rear Div. We would also get copies of things like the Stars and Stripes, the American newspaper, which again we would divert up so that it went into our own division. And we generally looked after the supplies which would make the Rear Div work. That was commanded by one of the three guardsmen in the whole of the campaign, Leggy Dinsdale, Welsh Guards. Brought his own batman, and there was another one in Japan, can't remember his name, Bobby Joyce, who I met later on, and lives locally here actually. He would be an interesting chap to talk to.
How did you come to leave Korea?
Well, after sort of going backwards and forwards from Seoul to Rear Division, I then did a short break at Incheon, where they had set up a sort of rest camp where they could pull troops back from the line, sort of a couple of platoons at a time.